We hope you enjoy the following presentation of First Steps in the Interpretation of Birth Charts, Part 2, by Dane Rudyar. This recording is 36 minutes long. This audio is brought to you by RITA, the Rudyar Institute for Transpersonal Activity, a nonprofit public benefit corporation dedicated to disseminating the work and essential message of Dane Rudyar. All material is copyrighted by Leila Rudyar Hill. If you'd like to learn more about RITA, or make a donation towards supporting the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyar, visit www.rudyarinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyar, visit www.rudyaraudioarchives.com. And now, Dane Rudyar.
But that is not particularly significant, in fact. Because what is important in a life, more than anything else, is that life has a certain focus. You see? That is one thing that is very important when you interpret a chart. Try to find what Mark Jones called a focal determinator. Try to find at once something which draw your attention and seems to be one of the things around which everything turns. Not necessarily everything, but become a focal point. Every human being has a kind of focal point somewhere. You remember him or her because of somewhat outstanding characteristic. In some way, there is something that stick in your memory of that person. And it's the same thing in a chart. There is usually something that become the key to the first key, at least, to the interpretation. The point is always to try to understand that the main thing in astrology is not to analyze things so that you can see how it ticks and tell something very startling to the person. Will say, "Oh, wonderful! Nobody knew about it," or something like that. But to try to see how you can help that person to live a richer and fuller life. That's really the essential thing, you see. Now, if you have a situation where you have that duality of hemisphere or funnel or seesaw things, where you have two factors which more or less have to be balanced, then, of course, the ideal thing is the triangle, because the triangle is that factor which symbolizes the possibility you have to bring understanding to a situation, you see. So the triangle is always a symbol of understanding. The trine is not particularly favorable, except it is the things which will lead to potentially to meaning and understanding of what your life is for, perhaps better. But then sometimes you have a very relatively easy way to understand everything, and then you have nothing to understand. I mean, what I mean by that is that you may live a very pleasant and quiet life where everything is nicely fixed and balanced, and you can overlook things and look over the whole things and have a nice view, and you are perfectly objective and quiet view, but nothing very much happened, you know. So you are not stirred in your depths, you have no great problem, and therefore you have no great activity either, you know. So one thing, for instance, speaking of that, which I think is very significant, and I think was Mark Jones was the first one to bring attention to it. He says, if you want to do something, to start an operation which obviously is going to be difficult. Suppose that you want to start a revolution, you know, or an insurrection or something, or a protest in a school or something like that. Well, obviously you are going to get resistance. You have to fight against inertia. Therefore, you will need a great deal of release of energy. Well, if that is the case, you see, don't start it under a trine of aspect because you will so easily understand the point of view of the person that you are fighting against, you won't feel like fighting against it, you know. And you won't have enough energy because you are not mad about it, you know. But start on a square, which will give you a dynamic power. You will get trouble, but if you are to succeed, you have to get trouble. You know? You have to break through something, and you don't break through something with a cotton stick, you know. You have a diamond point, you know. It's hard. If, in the contrary, you want to meditate on something quietly, and you have had all sorts of things that happened to you, and you say, now, I better be quiet and try to digest what it's all about. Then, of course, don't start that on the square, you know. So that when you have a threefold patterning of something, then you have more the capacity to get a certain kind of polarization, which is different than when you have a duality. Now, the simplest thing, of course, is what I call the tripod pattern, which Mark John doesn't list in these things, it's the main expression of the time when you have three groups of planets, you see, which are separated from each other, especially if they make broadly a time. One of the typical cases is Sri Aurobindo, the great yogi and philosopher, and so on. It can be sometimes negative also, but you transcend polarity through understanding, you see. Then you have two other possibilities. What I call the cluster pattern, when all the planets are within a third of the chart, 120 degrees, and the rest is empty. And then you have the other things where you have a third of the chart which has no planet and two-thirds of the chart which has planet. Mark Jones speaks of the cluster pattern as the bundle. But I don't think bundle is very good, because a bundle means that somebody is tying things down together, you know. So you have a concentration on a limited area of activity. And the danger is a lack of objectivity. You are too subjective, you are too concentrating on one thing, you see. But on the other hand, it shows a great focalization. And if somebody wants to achieve something very definite, that may be a very valuable thing, because you go one-pointedly into a certain direction. And so on. In the other case was the open angle, what I call the open angle pattern. You see, the person is very busy, perhaps with many activities, planets on two-thirds of the chart spread out, you see. But somewhere there is a third of the pattern which has no planets, so that you have an open angle. It's a kind of direction of life which you keep things open, you see, so that you can allow your unconscious or inspiration or spiritual forces to play. I mean, you have all sorts of things like that. And then you have the fourfold pattern, where you have four groups of planets which is, deal with the concretization, number four, concretization, also ambition. You have a number of Nelson Rockefeller as a good case of a fourfold planet, and many other, Jung, I think, has one also like that. Then you have the star pattern, which is more rare, when you have five or six different centers. And I give the example of Dr. Assagioli, the founder of psychosynthesis, who was a very broadly developing type of mind, and so on. And of course, there still remain a few cases where what you might call a non-harmonic pattern, where things do not fit too well into any definite pattern. What I think I might mention first, which I think is an important thing, is the difference between the progressions, the secondary progression, and the transit. People have a curious way of saying that it's all the same thing, because it is not. A secondary progression is the slow development of the potentiality which are inherent in the seed pattern of the birdshot. It's like if you look at an acorn, and if you are a good biologist, and you know how an oak tree develops, and you can see into that acorn the gradual development of the trunk and the branches and the flower and more acorns and so on. So that the secondary progression, you see, are the inner development of your potentiality, the process of actualization of that which was potential at birth. Transit, in the contrary, are the kind of things which the world around you is doing to you as a person. It may do all sorts of things, some of which are very nice and some which are not so nice. It can stimulate, it can bind, it can oppress, it can blur, it can kill you, it can do all sorts of things. But you see, if you are there, the chart, the birth chart, if that is the seed pattern of your existence, then the transit are the things which tend to break down or to alter your individuality. Yes. They break down the pattern of your things, because it is the not self which is always trying to do something for the self. The environment is always pressing upon the person to try to change it, to make it according to its own rhythm and so on. But that can be interpreted in many ways. If you are dealing with it with the small planet in transit, it may be those small factors which occur in immediate relationship with people, like you meet somebody that stir your adrenal gland or your sex gland or your funny bones or whatever it is, or you may be somebody who give you a sense of beauty and give you a chance to have a nice trip or something, or to give you money, or to provide things when you deal with Jupiter, or give you a sense of security, or in the contrary, a sense of insecurity and so on. But then there are the transit of the greater planet, of the most remote planet, like Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, which are not so much the environment immediately around you, but which is the way in which the greater whole, the galaxy, the humanity as a whole, or the great pattern of evolution of the Earth, or the attention of some great spiritual being, or who then try to help you to change yourself, to transform yourself, even if that means crisis and difficulties and so on. But in all cases, in a certain sense, it's all from the outside of you. Whereas secondary progression are the development of that which is potentially new from the beginning. Do you see the difference? Now, when you deal with progressions, I think the most important things to consider is the progression of the sun and moon in relation to one another. That is to say, the cycles which are produced by the progress new moons, or the progress full moon, progress, what I call the progress lunation cycle. And you are born at a part of a certain, inside of a certain lunation cycle. I think I mentioned it yesterday. If you are born at the first quarter of that lunation cycle, then there was a new moon some 15 days before, which in terms of one day a year of progression would mean 15 years before in terms of converse progression. But the point is that you are part of that cycle in terms of your vitality, in terms of the basic development of your personality. Then at a certain age later on, you will have a progress full moon, and then progress new moon. Progress cycle lasts 30 years because you have a new moon every 30 days, you see. And that is to my mind, I think I was the first astrologer ever to mention it. But it is, at least not to give it that importance, This, I see it as the most basic development of your potential of existence, potential of being. For one reason, it is only the progress moon which make a complete cycle around the chart and can make it two or three times or four times or whatever, how long you live. You see. Mercury, would have to be quite long, live long to get to a cycle of Mercury. So that astrology always deal with complete cycle. At least natal astrology anyway, or astrology of particular whole, particular organism. And so the cycle of the progress moon is the only complete cycle that you can experience through the different houses of your chart. But the moon alone is not the most significant thing. It is the relationship of the moon to the sun, the lunation cycle, which I see is the most important thing. The progression of the moon is important, of course, because it touches all the planets of the natal chart in every 28 years. But so it indicates the things. But it is the, if you divide the life into cycle patterns, that 30-year cycle of the progress lunation, from one progress new moon to the next progress new moon, I think is extremely basic. And you can do lots of things with it. You can, of course, see the every progress new moon seem to open up a new cycle of opportunities. It may not deal with any outer event sometimes. Very often it does, but not necessarily by any means. Maybe an inner change and so on. Then, of course, the change that is started at progress new moon tend to reach a certain fulfillment at the progress full moon 15 years later about. And it can either fulfill itself and then generate new energies and at a new level of consciousness, which in turn will lead to the next progress new moon, or if the thing that was started at the beginning of the progress new moon didn't work out well, then you may have a kind of divorcing of breaking down of pattern you may flounder around and get trouble or something like that until you get into the next progress new moon. In seeing the place at which those progress new moons happen in your natal chart, and the degree of the zodiac in which they happen, the symbol of the degree of the zodiac, that's very important in that case. The house in which they fall, of course, is very important. Of course, it cannot fall very far from the place where the sun was at birth, you see, because the sun moves only a 30 degree of the zodiac in 30 years. So if you live 90 years, all that it can do is to go the sign of the zodiac away from where it was at first, you see, at birth. So the progress new moon will stretch out every 30 degrees, you see. Are many people here using those Sabian symbols? Who has my book on the astrological mandala? Yes. Yeah, you haven't seen the book, no?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's a rather long story to explain how the Sabian symbol were found and all that, but if you read my book in the first chapters, you will find out how they were developed by a clairvoyant and Mark Jones, working with Mark Jones in the most extraordinary way. All the 360-degree symbols were found within one day, half in the morning and half in the afternoon. And totally at random, so that there was a calf there and nobody knew what degree of the zodiac it referred to, and that clairvoyant who had, I met the woman, she was a lovely person. She was quite paralyzed or had very bad arthritis. No, I think she had had polio, I think. She was in a wheelchair, and Mark Jones took her in a car in San Diego, in the park in San Diego, and they parked in a little corner there way back in 1926 or 22 or whatever it was. And she had a remarkable facility to visualize scenes and all that. So she would say, what do you see for that cart? And she would give the key in there, and he kept shuffling the cart all the time, so he didn't know even what degree of the sign. So he had 360 little carts, you know, empty carts. And then he would jot down very quickly what she told her. And I figured out that the time that there must have been one new scene that she saw every minute and a half or every 2 minutes, you know, which is absolutely fantastic. And yet, though it was completely at random, yet when the things are put together and all that, it's the most amazingly structured sequence of symbols, where you can take the opposite symbol and there's a very definite relationship. You can take the T-square, I mean the complete square symbols and all that, you get relationship. Every sequence of five symbols has a very definite pattern, a kind of syllogistic kind of pattern. It's an absolutely amazing thing. But no other system has ever come in that kind of way. I mean, with that absolutely extraordinary kind of pattern relationship and structural relationship. And yet, at the same time, we produce a complete random performance. So that whatever it was that produced those symbols in the mind of that woman, obviously was quite a masterful kind of intelligence. I don't think it was her herself. She was a very plain little person. Mark Jones obviously had much to do with it, but I'm not sure at all. I wouldn't think that it was his own so-called higher self, but I think something beyond them was involved. But I found it the most extraordinary, significant thing, and I point out in that book how they can be used as in oracles also, like the I Ching and so forth. And the interpretation that I have given there are very different from those of Mark Jones. He tried two or three times to have a series of interpretation, was never too satisfied with them. But mine are very different, and they are by no means complete, I mean, because those symbols can be interpreted at all sorts of levels. But I try to give what at the time seems to me the most basic level, and especially trying to bring it in a more constructive and more spiritual or psychological or whatever you want to call it level. So they are, but in many cases, of course, you have to use them and reinterpret them at a very physical, physical or material level if you are dealing with those kind of matter. But they are very remarkable, and if you can use the symbol of the degree of the sun, the moon, the everything, the ascendant, the four angles particularly, if you are sure of your ascendant, of the exact time you are born, of course, it can be very remarkable. I mean, I use them a great deal. The symbol of your progress sun, when it moves to a new degree, give you sometimes a very interesting keynote for the 12 months, you see, that you start. You must not overuse them, you must not be literal about it, and you must not, if the thing doesn't seem to give you a clue to it, forget it. I mean, just maybe perhaps a week later or a month later, just when they will realize more what it was all about, you know. Yes? Pardon me?
How do you use the moon's nose in interpretation?
The moon nose? Well, it's a long subject. I have one of the chapters of that book is entirely on the moon, on the nose, both the moon nose and the planetary nose. So First, the first thing that you have to remember is that the moon nodes are constitute an axis. That is to say, never think of the north node unless you think of the south node also. You see. For that matter, never think of the characteristic of your ascendant without realizing that it also involves the characteristic of the descendant, which is opposed, the opposite sign. And that is again something which is rather unfortunate, is that when people speak about the characteristic of an ascendant, take for instance, they take a Sagittarius ascendant, okay, and people take all about the Sagittarius ascendant and all that, and yet they never usually mention anything which could be deducible, could be deduced from the fact that you have Gemini on the seventh house cusp, you see. And anything that you say about the Sagittarius ascendant should include the characteristic of a Gemini descendant, you see. And you won't find that in practically anything. I mean, I try to bring some of those concepts in my book on the astrological houses. But you see, those are the kind of things that astrology doesn't think of, or most astrologers don't think of, because it's purely atomistic things. You take a little bit here and there, completely isolated, as if all the planets were not part of a solar system, you know, as if every point in your chart were not part of the wholeness of your chart. And that is what you have to deal with. Now, the line of the nodes is like you know what happened when life begins in the sea. It's usually a bit of seawater which is surrounded by a skin or a shell and so on. And there is always a point of entrance for the food and a point of exit for the waste products. And of course, in man, it is the mouth and the digestive things and the anus and so on. Well, in a certain sense, the moon, the nodes represent that channel of intake and outtake. So that at the north node, you take in, you deal with the function of assimilating. You have to chew your food, or at least you should, and you have to work with your stomach to break it down, to assimilate it, and so on. When it is the waste product, you normally should work at it. It should just go out, you know. And it should become more or less an automatic function. So that in a certain sense, you see, you speak of the north node as the point of ingestion of new experience, of new faculty. You build new faculty. You build new substance in your consciousness and all that. And the south node as the point of release, the point of evacuation, the point of automatic action. And sometimes it has been spoken of as the point of self-undoing. In the sense that if you let go of everything recklessly and things like that, you have a tendency to undo the harmonic integration of your total being. But a thing which, again, astrologers haven't seen is that at the lower parts of your trunk, there is not only the rectum or the point of the bladder leaving a waste product, but you have also a penis and you have also a sexual organ through which the seed also goes out. Well, now the seed, from a certain point of view, is a kind of waste product. It is made by the body, and when the woman has made an ovum, it can keep it, it has to evacuate it. So it is a kind of evacuation again. The man has too much sperm in his testicle, he has to evacuate it to some extent, usually, or it gets very nasty. So, in a certain sense, it's evacuation. But there is a great deal of difference, you see. And so I have found, and the first time that I thought about it was when I saw that Richard Wagner, you know, the great composer and writer and so on, who certainly had a life of great success and triumph, even though it was late in coming, at the south node in the 10th house. And I said, now that's very nice, but how can you say that his career or his public life was itself undoing? You know, I mean, maybe, and one could find some reason to it in a certain sense. But still, you have to reinterpret things. You can just put it that way. It was not exactly automatic action in the ordinary sense either. But then I began to think, then the correspondence with the release of the seed, the sperm, ovum, and so on. In other words, the south node can be the symbol of a release of power or energies or form, substance, which in a certain sense you have not produced, but which life has produced in you, or God has produced in you. It can be the release of a certain faculty of genius, which is inherent within you, perhaps, because if you want to speak of reincarnation, you have developed it in other reincarnation and whatnot. But in a certain sense, it turned out very often to be almost an automatic action. Quite well-known composer, French composer, Saint-Saëns, wrote lots of operas and symphonies and everything. Very fine composer indeed. And I used to say, I compose music as an apple tree produces apple. You know. In other words, and the action of a creative genius is very often a semi-unconscious or purely inspirational release. The things happen through him. And he doesn't very often, if he's sincere and honest and not too egocentric, doesn't really feel that it belongs to him to some extent. I mean, to him as an ego, as a person. It is something which the person has built in the past, certain faculty, and those faculty are being used by humanity, life, or God, or whatever you want to call it, to produce, to release seed, you know. Seed ideas, form of art and culture, and so on. So that in some cases you can find the South Node as an expression of a release of power, of faculties, abilities which have been built up in the past and which now have become almost spontaneous. But the tendency, of course, if you look at it from a psychological point of view, you might say, of course, that Wagner was a very unpleasant person, yeah, as a person, and that his career and his complete egocentricity, because he felt that he was the channel through which something of tremendous importance had to be released, which made it terribly egocentric and vain and everything else, and expect everything from everybody and so on. That it was a very point of self-undoing, I mean, as far as the development of his personality was concerned. What he could, from a purely psychological point of view, as a person, he should have focused on developing his first house, its integration of his personality and all those things like that. But therefore, in another sense, you see, it is a sacrifice to humanity, you see. He sacrificed the development of his personality as a person, as an individual, in order to become the carrier through which that great power was released into humanity. And you can say that of practically every great genius. So you have to be very careful with all those things. You have to look at them philosophically and not just get hypnotized because what some people say purely from an external point of view and physical point. Well, it's getting late. One question more? Yeah?
Do you use the nodes in aspect other than conjunctions with other planets?
Well, sometimes you might possibly get squares, possibly, but I don't. I usually don't pay much attention to that. Anything like that, physically a substantial entity like planets and all that, I think it's better not to think of them except in terms of conjunction, which of course means opposition because you are, the two are there. The same thing with the part of fortune and or its opposition and all that. I think it's better to only think of it from the point of view of conjunction. I don't even pay too much attention sometimes, perhaps I am wrong, to the aspect to the ascendant or to the mid-heaven, unless it is a conjunction or an opposition or maybe square. Because I don't like, you see, to relate two things which are of entirely different value. A planet is a planet, an angle is not a planet, you see, north is not a planet, it's an intersection between two orbits which don't exist really, you know. I mean, intellectually we see the plane of that orbit, and the plane of that orbit, they intersect, and where they intersect, you have what you call the nodes. But I mean, they change all the time, you know, you don't, they are very elusive, and therefore some astrologers say, oh, no good, you know, this kind of thing. But, and as long as you have motion, as long as you have cycle, as long as you have a solar system which include all those things, then they're all part of the solar system, and if you see them as part of the whole, as functional part of the whole, then you are safe. I mean, the thing is significant. But you have to see the significance in terms of the larger picture, not in terms of fragmentary things. Well, I think it's almost 10 o'clock, and so I wish you good luck, and I hope you have profited in some way from those talks together, and I enjoyed very much being with you, and I hope you enjoyed being with me. And good luck, and maybe we'll see each other again someday. Thank you.
This is the end of First Steps in the Interpretation of Birth Charts, Part 2 by Dane Rudjar. The preceding audio is copyrighted by Leila Rudjar Hill and was brought to you by Rita, the Rudjar Institute for Transpersonal Activity. Learn more about Rita or contribute to the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudjar at www.rudjarinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudjar, visit www.rudjaraudioarchives.com.